And I'll signal you when it's like 10 minutes and then 5 minutes. We don't
okay.
have cards. I don't know where they went.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I was born young in a hospital, and my mother was nearby. And that was pretty much the way it was. Mom was nearby. But let's see, I'm the youngest of 7, alcoholic home. By the time I got there, everybody was pretty drunk. And so it was, you know, one of them childhoods, full of fear all the time. And older brothers and sisters beating the crap out of me all the time. So, and then they, you know, took us off to Catholic school. And then the nuns were beating the crap out of us all the time. And, you know, then, so one day the nuns said, okay, we're going to go off to church. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen to me there, you know? And we went in, and what ended up happening to me is I fell asleep. And, like, this was great because I could not relax anywhere. I couldn't relax at home, couldn't relax at school, and I found a place that I could relax. And I woke up to the sound of myself snoring and drooling. I was drooling on myself. But, okay. Nobody, you know, nothing happened to me. I was like, oh my God, I was sleeping. Who's going to, you know, who's going to come and get me and beat the crap out of me or make me stand in the corner or whatever? And nobody did. So I used to like to go to church just to fall asleep, actually, just to get some rest. And so that went on and on. And I mean, I'm telling this for a reason because it has a lot to do with my story later. So one day I hear the preacher say, I was just sitting there zoning off as usual, and I heard the preacher say, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Love your neighbor as yourself. And I thought, I have never heard that type of thinking. And I thought, wow, you mean all those kids that are beating me up, the stuff that's going on at home, you know, I'm supposed to forgive them and to pray for them. And I left the church that day thinking, I was changed. At that moment when that thought came in, something changed in me. And I like to think of that as coming to believe, or I came to. I came to, I didn't believe or anything at that time, but I did come to. And I walked out of that church that day thinking, I'm going to try that. And so, you know, after next course of a few days, these bullies used to always come up to me on the playground. And so they came running up, and there's 3 of them. And I just sat there, just stood there saying, forgive them, for they know. I was scared to death, and I just kept saying over and over, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And it was like there was a force field in front of me, and these 3 kids ran up, and they stopped. And the one looked behind the other one's shoulders. They said, what's she doing? The other one said, I don't know. And they took off running. And I thought, that's when I came to believe. And I said, dang, this stuff works, you know? Power. I had a power greater than myself right then. And so I used to pray at night. And this is where I was turning my life and my will over that, you know, in Catholic school, you say the rosary and all that good stuff. So I would, at night, when I was going to sleep, I would pray, and at that time, I'm shaking, can you see? Anyway, I'm ready to put this sucker down and lean on the podium like everybody else, you know? But, so anyway, I would getting messages from my higher power. I would contemplate. I was just a little kid, and I'm doing this stuff, not because somebody told me or I went to some group and they showed me and taught me how, because I was being led by a power greater than myself. And that's what lets me know that, you know, this thing is real and that it really exists, and the people that come before me that wrote all this stuff down in the big books, in the big book and whatnot, experienced this. That's why it's written down. So it you know, it really is a path to a peace, to a place that you can have a relationship, personal relationship with a higher power. So this is where I came to believe, or this is where I start doing that, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this God. So then as I began talking to him and praying, and I would get messages back, I'd say, okay, I hate Sally at school. She's an a-hole or whatnot. And so, you know, the messages would come in that, you know, as long as you hate Sally, you can't love me. And I wanted that closeness with that higher power, so that hatred had to go. I had to get rid of that. And that's what I did pretty much as a kid. I worked on character defects, you know, and I'm just this little kid working on this stuff, and I don't even know it, you know. But I knew I was getting a relationship with a higher power, personal one. And that today is what I strive for. And because that's my peace, that's where it's at. And that's what I found out, that's what the program is all about. It's about cleaning house, you know, trusting God, being honest like you were, and finding that higher power. But, okay, so we went down the road a bit, and now I'm a lot more stuff happened in that alcoholic home. And I think each thing that happened, I don't know what happened to me, but I still believed in God, and I still had a relationship with God. But then around, you know, 16, everybody was drinking and whatnot, so I had my first drink. Bottle of Boone's Farm. You guys are too young to, you know? Okay, they still have that stuff? anyway, Boone's Farm, strawberry, apple, whatever it was, and a Budweiser. Why they had the Budweiser, but that's what everybody was given. All of us seventh graders were all given at this party, you know? And we were each supposed to drink our bottle of wine, and which I did. And a Budweiser, and I turned into something else, and I had, I felt so bad, and I had so much guilt and remorse. The next day, I said, I am never going to do that again. I think I was 15 then, and then around 16, I did it again, so at that time, it was going to school dances and stuff like that, and I would drink. They had GQs. They still have GQs? But anyway.
What is this, Jeopardy?
Alex, thank you, honey. What am I, spitting cotton again? It's the first time that's when I met Jim, the first time I spoke at this place, and he's sitting there like he is now, just smiling away, and I knew I had a friend, and so I asked him to be my sponsor. So that...
That's why you never do that.
12 years later, you know, I think I'm getting better. I don't know. What do you think, Sponce? Okay. Good. Good. So anyway, anyways,
16 at the dance.
16 at the dance, and so drinking GQs, and still I had no compulsion. It hadn't gripped me, you know, and So, you know, I just went on, no compulsion, just drank every, you know, if there was a dance or if there was this or that, and no big deal. And then once I hit high school, this boy came to our school from Detroit. I'm from Michigan originally. And he was so cute, and I just had to have him be my boyfriend. And so that happened, and then I found out I really couldn't handle love. I couldn't handle somebody. I couldn't handle my own feelings, intense feelings of love, because of what happened in my childhood. You didn't let yourself get too close, because if somebody hurt me, I wanted to kill them. I mean, I wasn't. I was like, I mean, seriously, like, kill them. And so that's when I found weed. And I started smoking pot. And it's when I smoked when I first got high, that was my, like a lot of people say, they, you know, they take a drink and they feel, you know, they finally fit in. The fear is gone, or whatever. But when I had that joint, it was like, all of a sudden, I fit in. All that fear and that separation and that the loneliness and the whatever left me. I could all of a sudden handle life. Nothing scared me. I got better grades. It wasn't like I got worse grades. I got better grades. I was more popular. And I thought I had found the answer to life. And if it stayed that way, I would still be there. But it didn't stay that way, and it doesn't stay that way. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse to death, insanity, or institutions, which I shall be talking about, all of those things. And from that point, I drank too, but then I realized I'm becoming an alcoholic. Oh, no, I'm sorry, drug addict. Becoming a drug addict. So I did the geographical cure, and I went to South Dakota, where I have a bunch of cousins out there on the ranch, and lived on a ranch for a summer, and it was really beautiful, but I took myself with me, and I actually took a joint on the plane. And I know, and Jim's giving me the, that's good, honey. Yeah. No, but anyway, thank God, you know, that back then you could do stuff like that and not get busted and all that. But anyway, so I made it to South Dakota, and my aunt handed me a beer, and the saga went on. I kept drinking. But I did stop smoking pot because it started making me paranoid. And so I started drinking, and by the time I got back from South Dakota to Michigan, and I was 18, turning 18, and drank like 18 margaritas, and the next day I had a panic attack trying to be in school. And from that moment on, the compulsion hit me, and that was my senior year. And from that time on, I white-knuckled it through my senior year just so I could graduate, because my dad was on my back so hard, and I'm glad he was. But at the time, I wanted him off my back, of course. And so I did graduate, but from then on, after that, I just said, to heck with it. I'm going to drink. As soon as that graduation went through, I said, I can't fight this anymore. I'm just going to drink. And from that time on, I never drew a sober breath. They say women go downhill faster, and I definitely did. If my eyes were open, I was drinking. And I had a lot of bad things happen. I mean, I sold my blood for a drink. I pawned everything that meant anything to me for a drink. Towards the end of my drinking, I was drinking about a case of beer a day, pint of peach schnapps, vodka, sundry other pills and things to smoke and things to snort. And that was pretty much my daily life. I was trying to drink myself to death. I used to see little bugs and stuff floating through the air, and I used to dream of snakes and spiders, and I wanted to die because I didn't know about AA. I didn't know there was a way to, there was a way. I didn't know there was a way out. And so, yeah. So one of the things that happened is I was trying to drink myself to death, and I was just doing everything I could to kill myself. And I was out drinking and driving one night with a couple of friends. And what's weird is that they were relatively sober, and they were letting me drive. I mean, that's how pushy I'm going to drive, whatever. And so I got pulled over, taken to jail, which I call prison, because the gym let me know that's not prison, that's jail. So I spent one night in prison, and scared the hell out of me. Scared the hell out of me. I mean, they put you in these orange jumpsuits, and you can't accessorize orange jumpsuits. You know what I mean, girls? Come on. So, and the prison guard, I know, jail guard, his name was Bertha, and I said, okay, this is the worst thing, this is my worst fear realized, to be in prison with a woman named Bertha. This is the worst. But that still did not sober me up, because fear can't get you sober. And I said that alcoholic prayer, God help me, because all I could see was drunk driving tickets, and eventually Mothers Against Drunk Drivers were in full swing back then. This was in 1984. So I was 25 when I came into AA. And back then they had Icky Pa. They still probably do. And so it's pretty cool. But so I got the drunk driving, went to jail, and had to do a bunch of hoops to jump through the court, and finally had the last final interview with the court. And this guy says to me, he says, are you having a problem with drinking? And I said, I had an angel on one shoulder, a devil on the other, and the angel saying, Rachel, just tell him you cannot stop drinking. Devil saying, well, you know, you can get out of here. And I just cut that voice short, because I said, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to drinking, go back to that hell? And I told him, it's like my whole body just heaved forward, and I said, I can't stop drinking. And at that moment, I think I had the Bill W. experience, to where the monkey fell off my back and I was struck sober. I was sober. I had the compulsion to drink left me, the obsession, the whole thing. And I checked into a treatment center the next day, and I have not looked back. But there's more. I was angry at God, very angry at God. When I first came into the program, I worked the steps. I worked the first half of step one, four and five. I skipped six, seven. I did eight and nine. I skipped 10, 11, 12. I did 10. And I admitted when I was wrong. But anything that had to do anything with God, I left it out. I couldn't, like the big book talks about, I couldn't fully concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic and that I could not manage my own life, because I was angry at God. Like those steps I took when I was a little girl, where I came to believe and then let him. I came to, I realized that I was powerless over alcohol. But I would not come to believe, because that would mean that something else had to manage my life. A power greater than myself would have to manage my life. And I was not going to have anything to do with that power. I was going to be my own power, and I was going to manage my own life. And what I found out was that what I was told is that we're born to be 100% dependent. That's what our beings are. We're dependent beings, and that dependency, if we don't plug it into the right thing, it'll plug into dope, drink, sex, food, gambling, whatever, anything to be addicted to or to be dependent upon other than God. So that's what ended up happening to me. I turned my life and will over to the care of a person, and they were only too happy with that and controlled me and told me, I'll be your God now. And once you trust me totally as your God, then I will transfer you off to God. I said, okay. And anyway, I didn't see my family for 9 years. It was something that's called an AA cult. And be pretty scared of this if you run into it, because you can see it happening in the program here and there, where people kind of follow around one person, and they're the only one doing AA the right way, and everybody else is wrong. So I didn't see my family for a long time, and I didn't even go in a grocery store or a bank or whatever. But this person was a substance abuse counselor, so I went to group every day, and we did the big book, and it's a story. It's a big story. Anyway, 5 minutes. Okay, long story short. Wow. So anyway, that person died. And in the 12 and 12, it talks about that the people we depend on, if we're being dependent on people, they either die or leave us, run away from us. Well, he died, and I was lost. So now I'm lost. And what ended up happening is that what ended up happening is at 16 years sober, I Baker Acted myself, because I had lost everything. I had no money, no home, no family, nothing. And so I Baker Acted myself because I knew I needed help. And that was when I came to believe that I was indeed insane, and that this disease, even without a drink, if I don't let a higher power manage my life, can take me to the nut ward, to the psych ward, to jail, all of those places, that this disease is a lot bigger than me. I can't manage it. I can't manage my own life. And so from that point on, 16 years, I started working this program. I said, I need two things. I need a big book, and I need a sponsor. And I need a sponsor that's been through the